McLean and Marotta mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley Blast.
It is just our luck in this forsaken sports town of ours that we get our very first NBA super team when the concept and the blueprint no longer works. Because while the Suns are two games away from elimination, super teams seem to be on the brink of extinction, mostly because the one in Phoenix is failing so spectacularly. Now, like most super teams, the Suns are far too top-heavy, especially in an era that emphasizes roster construction. They are clearly not connected. They don't communicate well, and this particular super team bucks the current trend by not hoisting up an abundance of three-point shots. Now, there are many heavy, awful questions as to what will become of this team if they flame out in the first round, because you certainly can't bring this team back, not with its behavioral issues, its lackadaisical nature, its unlikability, because no one is going to break an ankle jumping on a bandwagon for a disconnected, dispassionate, chilling basketball team. So, what will it be, Phoenix Suns? Are you going to be sturdy, hold serve, and punch back, or are you going to cement a legacy as one of the worst chapters in Suns basketball and the very last super team to roam the earth right before the meteor showed up? All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW, who make luxury attainable. Find them online at ChapmanBMW.com.
Yes, one day away from Game 3 of this series back in Phoenix, Bick. Can the Suns get in the win column?
Mm-hmm.
I feel still comfortable saying that's the focus of most people in Phoenix, Arizona. Can the Suns make this a series?
Mm-hmm.
Gauging from what is out there in the national media, from Stephen A. Smith saying, hey, I'm ready to say that this series is over. But let's face it, he says that about every series, every game. It's over. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
But the national media has kind of moved on from this series already. And they're looking at this, what you talked about, the spectacular failure of another super team and what that means going into the summertime. Let's get into this.
All right.
We're going to talk a lot about this series, game three tomorrow, as neither one of us is convinced that the series is over. But again, reflecting what the national media is saying, on the Bill Simmons podcast, you had Kevin O'Connor on. Listen to this.
Are we going to be making up Devin Booker trades in late June?
Booker before Durant or both? I'd be intrigued from the Phoenix side of things of just blowing things up completely, considering if you do suffer a first-round loss, worst-case scenario sweep, you got to be looking at the drawing board saying there's literally nothing that we can do. You don't have future assets. You don't have young players to trade.
And you're not allowed to sign free agents because you're over the second apron.
Yes, and not only that, the swaps that you've already traded, sometimes you've traded the swaps twice, further diminishing the value of your pick swaps. Like, they've tried to get creative with the limited amount of assets they have, but they got nothing to make significant moves. And this is a fundamentally flawed team.
What if you traded Booker and Durant? What if you traded Durant to the Warriors? I don't know. This is the kind of stuff. The point is, I was thinking about this stuff during the fourth quarter of that game where I was like, wow, this is now officially like we're in blow it upville, as you would call it.
It is entering that neighborhood because of the fact that they have nothing that they can do. And ultimately, it should be
at the stop sign going, wait, is that a right turn to blow it upville?
Listen, this is the third rail for Suns fans. Yeah. This is the conversation nobody wants to have. This is the conversation that Devin Booker stands, starts screaming in response to, but it's out there. It's not out there locally, but nationally, people are looking at these first two games and going, okay, if this thing continues trending the way it's going, and if this Minnesota defense continues to keep the Suns offense in jail, what are the Suns going to do?
Yeah. Well, if we hit the airwaves Monday morning at 6 a.m. and this series is over, mm-hmm. I'm a lot more comfortable going down that road. Again, mm-hmm. we're playing this as a reflection because that is what people are asking.
Yes.
Again, because of the disappointing nature of this team. Now, I will say, I think the national media, when things don't work out with a special with a super team, they take a special kind of joy.
There's no doubt.
We've seen it in situations past.
But you know what I'm mad about? I am mad that this Phoenix Suns team didn't do what I thought they were going to do, and that is pop. big, 65 plus win kind of big. I'm mad that they're not, that they have been such a failure relative to expectations. Because if they were what they could be, if they were this unstoppable offensive juggernaut, could you imagine the positive attention they'd be getting? That it's really a shame that this is what we're dealing with and this is what we're talking about. And again, this, as Vinny said, this is a reflection of what is being said about this basketball team. And you would think, as a basketball team that has responded to national media criticism on certain points this season, if they actually do like each other, they'd take offense to that and they'd realize the stakes. And they'd realize we better get this together or they might blow us up.
Yeah, here's another point from Bill Simmons from that same podcast that seems like it's very, very much looking at a series that's over and a failed experiment.
I wrote down, this is why you need a point guard. You know, the Suns, they were smarter than all of us, right? It was like, we're just going to trade everything for Durant. We're going to be the team that takes Bradley Beal. We don't need role players. We're the team that's going to figure out Nurkic as a reliable center, and then you're watching it just fall apart.
Look, we talked about that last summer when the Bradley Beal trade went down. It's like, ooh, this is intriguing. Mm-hmm. It could be devastating. Mm-hmm. It'll also be devastating if it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I'm not comfortable pinning all of the Suns' problems offensively on the lack of a point guard, but man, they could have used one. You know, and right now the reality of it is, you are going into game 85 this season without mm-hmm. having a point guard on your roster. That, if that doesn't drive home the importance of taking better care of the basketball, nothing will.
Listen,
so that's the frustrating part for me right
now. I am comfortable saying that point guard is at the root of their issues. And like I said, I think it's going to be number one. I think hiring Frank Vogel as a defensive-minded coach when this team should be built on offense instead of hiring a Mike D'Antoni type of hire, I think that might rank as number two. There are people out there, because I saw it, who think that the Suns should get dramatic here and bench Bradley Beal, bring him off the bench, and start Isaiah Thomas at point guard. I saw that yesterday, and I thought, okay, you know, basketball teams, when they get truly desperate, they will try stuff like that. But is there anything about Isaiah Thomas's appearances that lead you to believe he could handle 28 minutes at playing point guard?
No. They had an opportunity to see what they had in Isaiah Thomas in meaningful minutes in the regular season. They chose not to do it. He is there for a specific reason. And I hate to pile on Isaiah Thomas because I think he has been a positive light for this mm-hmm. team since he's been here with what he's done and taking pride in being a teammate and being a bench guy. Mm-hmm. But the fact that Isaiah Thomas, when he comes in at garbage time and looks incapable of scoring a basket, and then you look at the fact that he averaged 36 points in a handful of G League games, that to me is an indictment on the G League. But again, they had the opportunities to kick the tires to see what they had, and they chose not to do it.
Well, listen, 20 turnovers in a playoff game, which is what we saw in game two, it is unacceptable. If you are a team with championship aspirations, you've got to be a lot more connected and buttoned down than that. So it starts with that on Friday night. They're going to have to take care of the basketball, and they're going to have to be tough, and Devin Booker's going to have to make shots. And yeah, we'll see what's in them.
Yeah, it's weird too, because the people that are looking at this series from the Suns standpoint, I think half of them are saying, where's Kevin Durant? And half of them are saying, where's Devin Booker? So they're looking at two of the big three right now and wondering, hey, why are you not doing more for your team? Mm. Fair questions.
Well,
Devin Booker's numbers are way down.
KD was really good in game one, I thought. I would not put those two on an equal scale.
But I think when you also consider the historic reputations mm-hmm. and Kevin Durant's been doing it for so long and mm-hmm. his playoff numbers are just ridiculous off the charts. You know, what happened in game two to him? It's fair. So maybe mm-hmm. you're right. Maybe it's not equal, but they are both being looked at right now in terms of culpability.
All right.
Coming up next, it is draft day in the NFL and in Phoenix, Arizona. Are the vibes immaculate?
Oh,
we'll explain next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Luke. After months of speculation, we're finally going to get some clarity tonight. Where will the Cardinals go with the fourth overall pick? It's draft day, and we have you covered at 10 a.m. Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
It's one of those things where I could say it gives us a lot of flexibility, but as with anything, you need a partner. And so you need to find someone who's willing to move. And we have to be willing to move one way or the other, up, move down, and you got to find a dance partner on the other end. So, you know, I could come in here and say, hey, we want to move all the way around, but if nobody wants to move, then we can. And I could say, hey, we want to sit here and stand pat with all 11, and somebody comes with an offer that changes my decision. So that's not entirely up to us with all those picks. So that's why we got to just stay flexible and stay ready to go no matter what comes our way.
That's Monty Austin for last Thursday, a week ago, talking about having 11 picks in the draft that could change. Now, something that Monty said there as draft day has arrived, Vic. I don't think there's going to be any shortage of potential dance partners for the Cardinals to move. When you look at maybe these late rumors of these teams really wanting to move up to get their hands on a quarterback that's not named Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels, but you know, maybe May, maybe J.J. McCarthy, I think you're going to have options if you want to. How strong is the desire to put Marvin Harrison in the Cardinals uniform? Which brings us to cryptic tweet of the day from Cardinals quarterback Kyler Murray. It's not a bad one. 7:16 a.m., Kyler Murray posts on X, something about today just feels right. Vibes are immaculate. With a karate gi black belt emoji.
Why not?
I didn't even know that existed. Maybe Kyler's just getting a little taekwondo workout.
Well, we know that Kyler is not afraid to chime in about his draft desires when the Cardinals are on the clock, if you will. But that would seem, if you were wondering, if you had to pick, what does that mean? That means Kyler Murray thinks he's getting a wide receiver, right?
You would think.
That's what you'd think, right? Yeah, you're not going to get a quarterback getting immaculate vibes off of trading down. Right?
You might get immaculate vibes from a stud left tackle.
Paris Johnson Jr. Yeah.
I mean,
right.
I think they're pretty good at the tackle positions right now. I don't think that's something they need to address.
No, probably
now.
Need to maybe draft a guard.
Again, going back to those hit rates on the positions that we talked about yesterday, your hit rate on a tackle in the first round, very high, not so high on a wide receiver. We shall see.
I was thinking about that yesterday. The fact that there's a 92% hit rate for centers because there's only been 12 of them taken in the first round. Obviously, you only take a center if he's transcended. Dave Remington! It's the only one I can remember.
Well, I mean, you're also getting those guys at the end of the first round. I mean,
okay.
Was the last center that was drafted?
Mason Cole!
That was not a hit.
No. No. I wonder who those 12 centers are. Okay, I'm digressing. We don't need to talk about centers. So, yeah, so I'm glad that Kyler Murray is stoked.
Why did he put a karate gi? What's the symbolism?
He's big into Japanese pop culture.
Martial arts, Marvin Harrison?
Oh, cheap. Jared.
Something?
Go back to bed. Go back to sleep. Put your head back down on the board. Martial arts, Marvin Harrison.
I'm trying to figure something.
Trying to crack the code, Beck.
That's a stretch, man. That is a stretch.
Maybe he's watching Cobra Kai.
Maybe. Yeah, it's possible.
When is that new season out, by the way? Man, they should have killed that series after. Where's it going, by the way?
So listen, so I think that if what I was told from a guy of mine in New York, that the Giants are backing off pursuit of a quarterback, that would mean to me that there's not going to be a ton of, they're not going to be teams competing and looking to get to three or looking to get to four. So if you're Minnesota and you're getting that same kind of intel, you can probably pick your dance partner with less cost involved.
Yeah.
We'll see. You might not have to move at all.
Here's a little nugget on Minnesota from yesterday. This is Jeff Darlington of ESPN.
The Vikings hold the 11th overall pick in this draft. And by the way, they also have the 23rd overall pick. That is the type of ammunition that it would take for the Vikings to move up into this draft to get their coveted quarterback, which they desperately need. The question is, how much are they willing to give up for what quarterback? Now, I'm told throughout this draft process that they have had their eyes on Drake May. And surely May is one of those quarterbacks we expect to go early. The New England Patriots currently hold the 3rd overall pick. Now, they could end this debate and take May on their own, or they could open their ears to a potential trade from the Vikings. If the Vikings were to trade up to 3rd, May would be the person that we would be watching. I'm told that there are no other quarterbacks that would covet that kind of of attention for the Vikings at this point. Wow.
And it would take a ton for the Vikings to move up that far from 11 to number 3. Some of the projections I've seen this morning, people trying to figure this out, saying it would take something like 11, 23, a first and a third rounder next year to move up just to get number 3 to take Drake May. Which the Patriots... Look, that's a team with a ton of needs. That's a team with not a ton of talent on that roster. Yeah. That might be the tack that they take.
So that might be the team. So if that would confirm that if there's going to be a draft day slide, will it be J.J. McCarthy? Now, Jim Harbaugh came out and said he had the greatest pro day I've ever seen. Well, of course, he won you national championship. Uh-huh. Of course you're going to say that.
Yeah, you should
prove
him.
Draft him. Yeah, right.
Trade Justin Herbert.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
A couple of the quarterbacks were asked yesterday in this whole process about the Giants and what you're saying now, what you're hearing, Giants backing off. Maybe they're playing possum.
Maybe.
Maybe they're putting up a smoke screen.
Maybe.
J.J. McCarthy himself said his most memorable visit was with the G-men.
Who are the teams that you've really enjoyed kind of going through this process with?
I want to say, you know, just comes to mind right away is the New York Giants. You know, I had a great time with them, met with them twice, went out there for a 30 visit, and they came for a private workout as well as, you know, showing up on pro day. So just being able to, you know, spin the pill on Easter Sunday was just a blast. Being out there with the guys doing that was so much fun. And, you know, Coach Dable, Mr. Shane, Coach Kafka, Coach Tierney, just great guys and great football guys. So it was just awesome to be with them.
Translation.
Spin the pill.
I was going to say, would you not draft someone just for the referring to throwing a football as spinning the pill?
That's points off, I think.
I agree with that.
Translation.
Yeah, there is a deduction.
He hated Top Golf in D.C.
Yeah. That's like when you stumble and you dismount the, what am I talking about? I was the world's worst at gymnastics.
You tried gymnastics?
Oh, I was just dreadful. Oh. Dreadful.
Pummel horse?
It's one sport I never tried.
Pummel, not pummel.
Well, maybe the way you did it.
Drake May talked about the possibility of the Giants moving up to get him.
Drake, there are some talks of teams trading up for you, one of which could be the Giants. How does it make you feel knowing teams are being aggressive and wanting to get you on their team?
Yeah, I think it means a lot. I think not only to, you know, the player I am on the field, but, you know, once they met me off the field, kind of what that means to me. But I think, you know, anywhere I go, I'm ready to go, you know, ready to go compete and ready to play and hopefully the franchise, you know, a solid quarterback.
Did you meet with the Giants?
I did, yep. I met with the Giants.
And how do you think that went?
Yeah, I think it went great. Yeah, I met with them at the combine first, and then they've been great ever since. So Coach Dayball, he's seen what he's done with quarterbacks, so they got a good thing going.
All right, is it just me, or does Drake May kind of have the same vocal tone as Eli Manning?
Yeah, maybe a little.
He talks faster.
A little bit faster. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe a little.
The same.
Okay.
Less gumpish than Eli.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Well, yeah, I like New York. I'm here to be your quarterback in the big city.
That's my Jenny. Coming up next, we will talk specifically about the Cardinals and their draft day strategies, what that haul, what those vibes could be like tonight. Darren Urban, azcardinals.com, will join us next here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. This Thursday, draft day. First round gets underway today at 5 o'clock. Cardinals on the board right now at number 4 and number 27 in the first round. Here to talk Cardinals draft with us from azcardinals.com. Darren Urban checks in on the Arizona Sports Line. Good morning, Darren. How are you?
I was mistaken. Jared said we're going to be talking Suns. I didn't think we're going to be talking Cardinals draft. So now I'm thrown.
Look, I follow you on social media. I see your reaction to the Suns over the years. Is it over, Darren?
Yeah, I think I'd rather talk Cardinals draft.
Yeah, it's a good idea. So what are these immaculate vibes that Kyler Murray is feeling, Darren?
Well, gosh, Dan, I wish I knew. I haven't talked to Kyler in a while. I'm guessing he's talking to more people and knowing more things than I am right now. But, I mean, obviously, the way this feels like it's trending, there seems to be a fairly decent chance with all the other reports coming out that the Cardinals are going to end up taking a player at 4, and whether that's Marvin Harrison or not, I mean, I would guess if they stayed there. You know, I've held this all along. I've thought it was really funny earlier in the week. All of a sudden, we start seeing these reports of, well, the Cardinals have decided they're going to wait until they're on the clock before they make any decisions. And I was saying to some of my cohorts on our podcast that, yeah, because I've been saying that since basically February. Like, what would be the point of either side doing anything until the Cardinals are on the clock? It would be malfeasance for another team to want to trade up, not knowing what quarterback would be there at four. And it'd be stupid for Monty Ozenfort to not, you know, completely leverage out what he's got going. So I always thought it was going to be something that was on the clock, but, you know, we'll see if that actually draws any interest by the time we actually get to number four.
If, you know, the fourth pick comes tonight, the Cardinals are on the clock, and they do end up with Marvin Harrison Jr. Obviously, it's a huge, huge area of need. What else would you like to see the Cardinals do later on in the first round in terms of positional need?
I mean, you would think, given the circumstances, that it would probably be a defensive player with that second first-round pick. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it makes all the sense in the world to get a receiver first, because that is a position where they need something. But I think the defense needs more help right now. I think you've got some options there at 27. You should have some options there. And that only should, judging by the reports about how it looks like there's going to be a run on offensive tackles in the first round, that should push down some decent defensive players down there. Now, whether they stick at 27, I don't know. You know, we've talked all about whether they're going to trade down from four, but we don't know what's going to happen at 27. Could they trade up for a couple places to get a defensive player or somebody that they really like? Sure. But I could also see them trading back a few spots and gaining more picks that way if they see a clump of players around 27 to 32 or to 34, whatever, that makes sense to them. So I'm not ruling out if Monty Ozenfort does not trade out of four, I'm not ruling out that the first day of the draft still won't have a Monty Ozenfort trade special.
Now, you don't necessarily want to draft by position, especially when you've got great athletes and great players sitting on your board if you've got them rated highly. But if there were some obviouses, if there were other some boxes that had to be checked in terms of what kind of positions we are going to bring to this team to suit some areas of need, what would they be other than wide receiver and edge rusher to you, D?
I would think cornerback still remains something. They signed Sean Murphy Bunting in free agency, and they obviously had a couple guys they drafted last year. But I think if you were to get a cornerback in the first couple rounds, perhaps, or even in the third round, that's a person that could be in the mix for playing time, depending on, you know, who's there and all that. And I think guard, I mean, you mentioned that earlier, you know, guard or center, either one, whichever player fits better with where you're picking. You know, Yelda Froholt played, I thought, solid at center last year, but he's a guy who's played guard before. You could move him to guard if you got a center that you like more. But obviously left guard is a spot that needs some attention. And again, when you're drafting, it can't just be about this year either. And when you talk about Jonah Williams, the tackle, being only on a 2-year deal, Will Hernandez's contract is up after this year. You know, you've got spots where, okay, maybe they won't be immediate guys now, but you're going to have needs sooner rather than later. And that's why when people talk about taking the best player available, that's kind of what they're implying. Okay, maybe you're not going to completely ignore needs, but the needs are going to be there sooner rather than later at almost every position, because that's just the nature of the game.
Darren Urban, azcardinals.com, our guest here on the Arizona Sports Line. At this time of the year, everybody becomes a draft analyst to some degree. In that process for you, going back to the number four overall pick, if the Cardinals make that pick and it is a wide receiver, is Marvin Harrison your choice? Do you think there's an edge there over the other receivers that could be considered as the top receiver in this class, Darren?
I mean, for me, I'm going to defer to the masses that say that that's the fact. I'm not going to lie. I have not seen enough of all three guys. I've seen all of them play. I've not seen all of them enough to say this guy's definitely better than the other ones. But it sure feels like there is something about Marvin Harrison that most people really like. And I don't think they would go wrong. If something were to happen and they trade down a few spots and get one of the other two guys, I think they're still in a really good spot. But it feels like if they stay there, that would be the guy. And it just, there's so many things that would go into it. If you can get a guy and Dan knows this, if you can get a guy that is really good and fits a need, oh, and by the way, the fan base loves, I mean, that's just icing on the cake. And clearly, I think at this point, the fan base is hoping for him.
I was talking to a football guy yesterday, and he said that of players that are already on the Cardinals rosters, there are people really high up on Michael Carter at running back, at John Gaines on the offensive line, and even Elijah Higgins backing up Trey McBride. So my question is, if you add a potential guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. or even one of the top three wide receivers, what might be the ceiling for this offense next year?
I mean, you have to be encouraged by what they did down the stretch and how they really seemed to fit into this run-first mentality and playing off of that. But again, when we get to, we're going to talk about the draft and we're going to talk about the weapons and we're going to talk about what they add. But what are we going to be talking about in a month, in 2 months, in 4 months about where this team is headed and what this offense is going to do? It's going to be about Kyler Murray. It's going to be about what steps forward he can take. Now, obviously, when you add weapons to him and you get another year of experience and a full offseason, that's only going to help everybody involved. But it's going to be about the quarterback making those steps and, you know, getting to the point where, okay, we're going to have this offense, we're going to have these weapons. Now, what can you do with them? And I think ultimately, when you talk about what this offense can become, I think it's going to start with QB1.
Darren Urban from azcardinals.com, our guest here on Bickley and Marotta Mornings. What number draft is this for you that you're covering, from a Cardinal standpoint, Darren? Do you know the number?
2001 was my first one, so what does that make this, 23? I believe this is 23. Wow. My Jordan year.
Wow.
My Jordan year.
Oh, of all those years covering the Arizona Cardinals from a draft perspective, what's your favorite story? What's your favorite memory from draft day over the years?
Oh, my favorite. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily my favorite, but I mean, again, and we've been talking about it so much this week because it's the 20th anniversary, but that weekend where in those days, the draft was Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
But to come in Friday morning and be talking about the death of Pat Tillman, and then the very next day having Larry Fitzgerald fall into their lap, wow, because the Raiders decided to go with Robert Gallery. I mean, that's a weekend that's really burned into my mind. And obviously that draft ended up being unbelievable for the Cardinals. Yes. Darnell Dockett and Carlos Dansby and Antonio Smith. But that 2-day stretch, that 24-hour stretch where you're talking about first the Pat Tillman stuff and then Larry Fitzgerald getting drafted, I mean, that goes down in franchise lore in terms of draft weekends.
Yeah, that draft class turned out to be a big part of the Super Bowl team a few years later. Darren, always good
stuff,
to talk to you, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Darren Urban, azcardinals.com, our guest on the Arizona Sports Line. Coming up next, we're going back-to-back guest. We're going to find out what the heck is going on at Arizona State University.
Oh,
and their athletic director, Serge Chris Cartman, sundevilsource.com. He'll join us to explain straight ahead. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, all in for the Suns in the playoffs.
Yeah, all in for the Suns. Suns fans, here's your code word of the day. That word is Devin, D-E-V-I-N, as in Devin Booker. Text Devin to 620-620 right now. Enter your info. You could be heading to a Suns home playoff game, and be sure to be listening into the Wolf and Luke show during the noon hour today for the next Suns code word. Again, code word for today is Devin. Text that to 620-620. Good luck. Continue on this Thursday edition of Bickley and Marotta Mornings. 164 days since Ray Anderson stepped down as Arizona State's athletic director. They still don't have one, and that might be on hold a little while longer here to explain. The publisher of sundevilsource.com, Chris Cartman, joins us here on the Arizona Sports Line. Chris, good morning to you, sir.
Hey, good morning.
So the Graham Rossini story breaks yesterday that he's getting ready to be presented by Michael Crow to the Board of Regents, and there's blowback from donors. That's the nutshell. Give us a little deeper what the blowback is all stemming from the side of the donors, Chris.
Yeah, so really for a few weeks now, I've been hearing a mounting buzz about Michael Crow wanting to, in his new sort of structure, have Graham Rossini as Arizona State's athletic director reporting to somebody who is kind of more taking on an overseeing role on the campus of athletics. So there would be like an intermediary person who would be in the reporting structure between the athletic director and the president. And there's just a lot of people who are from border regions, members, Sun Devil Club members, prominent boosters, who have expressed skepticism about any promotion at this time, given what has transpired in ASU athletics in recent years. It's not so much any sort of personal challenges about Rossini, even though he hasn't worked in any other successful athletic department. He's only been at ASU for a few years now, all of which were during the NCAA investigation. And he's risen through the ranks pretty quickly. He was, Ray Anderson was the person who wanted to hire Graham Rossini originally, which I think is another thing that people are a little bit skeptical about. And Crow was expected, as soon as today I heard, to present elements of his plan in this restructuring of athletics that may have included the Rossini element. Not 100% for sure about that part of it, but he was trending toward a process of presenting that as his plan. And he's going to face some really tough questions, because people that I've spoken with have said that he's going to be asked, what was your process like? Who all have you interviewed over the last however many 6 months? Mm-hmm. And why is this the thing that makes sense when, you know, you haven't really, because I've heard that they haven't really had a wide search, and there hasn't been a lot of candidates interviewed, if any, really. So, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. All right, well, first of all, congratulations, Chris, for being the voice of authority on this story. You've been talking about this story for months. In fact, it seems like a while ago where you were very strongly implying that, yeah, Herm Edwards isn't clean in this. Well, it turns out that he certainly was not clean in this, and it contradicts this idea that Michael Crow put forth and Ray Anderson put forth that there was wrongdoing, but it was nothing at all to do with the head coach. What kind of accountability should be demanded, and will it be demanded from the president who paid Herm $4.4 mil on the way out the door?
Well, yeah, it was on your station in February of 2022 that Michael Crow said that the people who were responsible for the cheating were no longer a part of the program. But that same day, later on, I was able to report, based upon people being really incensed by what Crow had to say, that already for some weeks, or maybe even a couple months, 2-3 months, there had been meetings with NCAA investigators and recruits who named Herm Edwards as being personally participant in the recruiting that was not allowed during the COVID dead period. Like, that the investigation had already been going on for quite a while at that point. They'd already had all these interviews, and ASU compliance department officials are on those Zooms. So there clearly were ASU officials who knew that Herm Edwards was involved, according to a number of people. So the idea that Crow at that time would say that the people who were wrongdoers were gone, either he was unacceptably out of the loop, or he was being dishonest. Either one of those answers is makes you feel really sort of lack of confidence, mm-hmm, in what's happening in the management of ASU athletics. And then, of course, from February to September, that's another 6 months or whatever, and then ASU decides to give $4.4 million to Edwards to walk away. And at that point, they had heard from many more people about Herm Edwards' involvement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I reported, even in February 2022, very specific details about the rented house in Paradise Valley that Herm Edwards was involved in recruiting two different prospects, and Herm Edwards meeting on campus with recruits, and there being a photograph of him at the time that was part of the dossier that was provided to ASU. So that doesn't really make a lot of sense, and a lot of people are also very unhappy about that and want answers.
Chris Cartman, SunDevilSource.com, our guest here on the Arizona Sports Line. Going back to the AD search, and the basic question is, you talked about there not being a strong, deep list of candidates. The length of this quote-unquote search has lagged on forever. Why has it taken so long? And other than the optics looking very, very poor at this point, how damaging has this lag in hiring been to ASU?
Well, so Michael Crow has wanted to change some of the financial structuring of the athletic department. So, for example, right now ASU is being subsidized to the tune of like $10 to $20 million in scholarships and other things. And I think that he's trying to make it look better on the books by absorbing some of those things through the school, which makes a ton of money and can easily do that in a way that maybe frees up or at least makes it look better on the athletic department books. And then, as I mentioned earlier, they're looking at this new sort of reporting org chart structuring where they have somebody else who works underneath Crow who also oversees athletics, which would then make the athletic director a sort of a less prominent, maybe even less powerful job. And so if you're going to hire somebody who's a successful, competent, existing athletic director, let's throw out a name, David Benedict at UConn, who hired Danny Hurley. He's done a really good job. He's from Tempe originally. He worked in ASU athletics for like a decade or so, going back to the Gene Smith era, which was the last sort of functionally successful athletic department at ASU. That might not go over well with a person like that, who then is constrained in these kinds of ways. So that sort of thing lends itself to the idea of a promotion of somebody internally who is working within the construct that Michael Crow wants, which again is something that creates a lot of questions and things that, you know, prominent boosters are not really liking the idea.
Yeah, especially since the replacement for Larry Scott as Pac-12 commissioner, there was a feeling inside the league that we're not going to consider what Michael Crow has to say because he led us down the wrong path in the first place. Do you get the idea that Abor is sharing some of that dissatisfaction? Because like I said, John Wilner had that piece about the funding of ASU basketball and how pathetic that is compared to the peers in conference. And I guess the big question is, how does this issue get solved?
I don't know that it does get solved, because Michael Crow has so much juice because of what he's been able to accomplish with the university that overwhelms the very obvious failures in ASU athletics. And it gives him enough political capital that whatever challenges are presented to him, it's not sufficient enough to prevent what he wants to happen from being accomplished. Now, one of the things I reported yesterday is that the Board of Regents is considering tethering some bonus structuring in Crow's next contract to revenue sports success. But even that, I don't think is going to have much of an impact. Vast majority of income that Michael Crow has is totally unrelated to this, and so it seems like a move that might sound good, but won't have any probably real ramifications whatsoever. There are people with the Board of Regents who are very unhappy with the state of ASU's athletic department. And don't want to see a promotion of anyone at this time. It's not really a grand Rossini thing, but it's more about just the overall operation and what has clearly been a black eye for ASU in recent years.
Chris, like Bick said, man, you've been all over the stories
great job,
and everything
man.
With ASU. Great job. Appreciate the time and the insight.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Chris Cartman does a great job. And go to sundevilsource.com for more details on not only the show cause penalties for coming down on the football program, but the AD search as well. He joined us on the Arizona Sports Line. Coming up next, we'll hit some social studies to kick off the 9 o'clock hour here on Bickley and Murata Mornings on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.